Hello and welcome to the UUCSV podcast. I'm Evan Yannick, your regular host, back after inviting a special guest host last week. Based on feedback from many of you, I believe more and more of our congregation is gathering here to listen to our sermons for the first time or for a second listen if they found something especially moving. As we begin the holiday season, I know many of our congregants will be traveling, so hopefully they will be able to use this podcast to remain in community and spirit, if not in body. As always, I want to remind us all that the mission of our church is to create an open, active, and welcoming, liberal, religious community that nurtures spirituality, inspires growth and learning in the search for truth, and challenges us to live our values conscientiously through service and example. Reverend Michael Carter this week discusses the history and complications surrounding the Thanksgiving holiday. If you choose to celebrate during this time or not, I believe you'll find something interesting in today's sermon. It was recorded on November 24th, 2019. Thanks for listening.
A young man named John received a parrot as a gift. The parrot had a bad attitude and an even worse vocabulary. I mean, every word out of this bird's mouth was rude, obnoxious, and it was laced with profanity. And John tried and tried to change the bird's attitude by consistently saying only polite words, playing soft music, and anything else he could think of to clean up the bird's vocabulary. Finally, John, like most of us, got fed up, and he yelled at the parrot, but the parrot yelled back. John shook the parrot. The parrot got angrier and even more rude. John, in desperation, threw up his hand, grabbed the bird, and put him in the freezer. And for a few minutes, the parrot squawked and kicked and screamed. And then suddenly there was total quiet. Not a peep, not a sound was heard. Fearing that he'd hurt the parrot, he quickly opened the door to the freezer. The parrot calmly stepped out into John's outstretched arms and said, "I believe I may have offended you with my rude language and actions. I'm sincerely remorseful for my inappropriate transgressions, and I fully intend to do everything I can to correct my rude and unforgivable behavior." John, like you, was stunned at the parrot's change in attitude. And as he was about to ask the parrot what had made such a dramatic change in his behavior, the bird spoke up very softly and he said, "May I ask what the turkey did?" It's terrible. Terrible. Disgraceful. Albert Camus once wrote, "Yes, there are deprivations, which give rise to our worst sorrows. But what does it truly matter what we've lost when what we have lost is not entirely used up? There are so many things susceptible of being loved that surely no discouragement can be final. To know how to suffer, to know how to love, and when everything collapses, to pick it all up again, to being simply the richer from suffering, happy almost in the awareness of our misery." It sounds very Buddhist. Asheville therapist Michelle Alvarez says that diversity is having a seat at the table, inclusion is having a voice, and belonging is having that voice be heard. I have heard many wonderful graces on Thanksgiving, coming from not just that tradition, but the Baptist tradition. And when you hear a Baptist minister pray, it can be amazing. It can also be long. And sadly, Thanksgiving, in many ways and for many individuals, is seen as only a starting point for the Christmas frenzy. Or instead, giving thanks for the football season. When the Pilgrims arrived in 1620, they originally headed for Virginia, but were blown off course, and they landed at Plymouth, Massachusetts. Originally, the pilgrims thought this land was sweet and gentle, only soon to realize, having arrived just before winter, that it was anything but. And I want you, if you can, a wonderful article written by, by Philip DeLoria. His father was Vine DeLoria. He's a Native American intellectual, especially around religion, and he's Lakota. I just want to, I think it's in the Washington Post, but just give me a second, because, it's called What Really Happened at the First Thanksgiving. It's in the New Yorker this month, November 18th, Massacres, Myths, and the Making of the Great November Holiday. I commend it to you highly. We can't get into it here, but you must read that. Anyway, back to the pilgrims. In the course of the first winter, half the men and two-thirds of the women had died of cold, disease, and starvation. The following spring, the Native Americans made contact with the beleaguered pilgrims. This is kind of the part of the myth that Brother DeLoria goes into. They showed them how to plant seeds, build better shelters, find medicinal herbs for health, and how to hunt and trap fur and tan the fur. The bounty of the following autumn was great, and so legend has it, the pilgrims invited these native peoples to celebrate and give thanks. No doubt thanks were given to the gods of each tribe, the sky god of the pilgrims, and the earth circle of the natives, given that many, if not all, of these pilgrims saw their native host as beneath them, even given that they thought their god superior, even given that they would the following year begin the long slaughter and displacement that would become the sad history of our civilization towards native peoples, those pilgrims must have been truly thankful for the native peoples themselves. And ever since, we've been trying to reenact that meal. But as comedian John Stewart has pointed out, that if we really wanted to celebrate Thanksgiving the old-fashioned way, we would invite all our neighbors to our house, feed them an incredible feast, and then kill them and take their land. It's rough. Another part of the story about Thanksgiving, though, in addition to the genocide of Native people, is the fact that vastly different people sat at a table together. It is mythical, of course, to believe that all was smooth sailing at the first Thanksgiving dinner. It certainly never has been since. I mean, how is it at your house on Thanksgiving? Perhaps with relatives who were quite different than you politically, religiously, socially. Thanksgiving is the day for many people when you hear from relatives you hardly see, use racial slurs about people who are not really going to take your jobs away. And this was particularly difficult for some of us who were still trying to process the 2016 election. But perhaps Johnny Carson was right. Thanksgiving is the holiday when people travel thousands of miles to be with people they only see once a year and realize that that one day was way too much. And I'm sure your dinner wasn't anything like that, though, I'm sure. It takes planning and tolerance to invite people to the table who are radically different from you. It takes, in the words of what the philosopher William Connolly calls agnostic respect, which is basically understanding and working with someone most unlike you, someone you might not even like. Why is it that we invite people to our table who are so unlike us in the first place? Could it be that we are inclined by our very nature, our very human nature, to celebrate the human within us regardless of how we relate? I think there is another a meaning to the season, and I believe that we are here to transcend our differences, however stark they are, and for a brief moment to celebrate our common humanity. We remember empathy, that feeling for being the other. Remember that empathy. It's why we at least ask, how can I get along with people, family who are so different from me politically, religiously and culturally. So my message this Thanksgiving holiday is not so much that we rise up and fight the forces of racism and all the other isms we must deal with in the world. There's plenty of time for that. We will get to that. But rather to look around you. Look around you and see the reflection of yourself in another's eyes. And then see their own eyes. This is what the wisdom literature teaches us. Seek first to understand and then to be understood. As the great Rabbi Harold Kushner said, do things for people not because of who they are or what they do in return, but because of who you are. I've encountered people, some native, some not, who do not celebrate Thanksgiving, which they see in good liberal fashion as a celebration of genocide. I admire them for that. And while I don't give up Thanksgiving or Halloween, even though that's mostly for my daughter and my ex, Christmas is one of the holidays I really like. They are a vital part of my celebrations. But I do try to live up to what I consider to be my life's mission, which is to love, at least learn, at least to try to love unconditionally and then to serve. Whether you celebrated Thanksgiving or not, the fact remains is that we live and make meaning in a world of increasing plurality, a vast sea of differences that makes us white and black and brown and red and yellow and rich and poor, conservative, progressive, gay, trans, straight, all the labels we come up with. We are going to have to come to grips that there are more and more people coming to the table of our bounty, and we need to make room for them, not just invite them in for the feast of life, but offer them a seat at the table. The immigration debate notwithstanding, the world our children's children will inherit has a much larger table if we don't get hit by an asteroid or poison ourselves or kill ourselves. I find it amusing that we are so preoccupied with who we are going to let into our country when the white upper class will soon be the minority. There is simply no way of getting around it. All people will have to be at the table. That is where we are going, regardless of who is president. And the sooner we get ready, the better. Western civilization has never been all that civilized. We are in a time of great incivility, the extent to which we need to hold onto our moral compass. When Gandhi was asked what he thought of Western civilization, he replied he thought it was a good idea. Our liberal faith exalts kindness, compassion, and understanding. William Connolly reflects on our perception of change in this way. He says, we participate in change in at least two ways. He's a wonderful philosopher, by the way. Action-oriented perception and the slower experience of the past folding into the present, and both kind of flowing into the future. In other words, we can just wait for it, or we can hasten it along. I choose to hasten it. A day when Thanksgiving will be about an even bigger family than just the relatives we don't really like. And isn't this what our faith calls us to do? Isn't this what Unitarian Universalism calls us to do? Our sixth principle calls on us to work toward world community. It reads that we affirm the goal of world community with peace, with liberty, and justice for all. So it's not just an international community, it is a global community. Social media is filled with all kinds of things against this person and against that policy. And if you follow Facebook, you know how exhausting that can be. Honestly, I think perhaps maybe through the holiday season, we might all take a bit of a holiday from it all. Just take a break from it As the book of Ecclesiastes reminds us, there is a time for everything under the sun, a time for war, and a time for peace. As we leave the season of Thanksgiving and enter the time of the winter solstice and the season of Advent, we all need a bit of peace before we decide to take up the struggle again. Yeshua, the apocalyptic Jewish rabbi who invited everyone to his table, realized the inevitability of balance in the cosmos. Change occurs because empires must fall, simply because it is the nature of empires to fall, wrote Howard Thurman. And so it is with us here in our empire, unless we wake up really, really quickly. But be that as it may, the table for all is coming. Now, you and I may not be here to see it, but it is. It is coming. The great feminist theologian Sally McFaig put it this way: the teachings of Yeshua spells not primarily holiness, but wholeness. The salvation of God's basilica is present and experientially available whenever Yeshua casts out demons, heals the sick and the ritually unclean, tells stories about the lost who are found, of the uninvited who are invited, and of the last who will be first. Not the holiness of the elect, but the wholeness of all is the central vision of Yeshua. The emphasis here is on inclusiveness. All are invited, and what they are invited to is a feast of fulfillment and a feast of joy. The invitation is not to chosen individuals, but to all. This is the insistence of liberation theologies across this planet, that salvation must be a social, political, economic reality in history in order for all of us to be whole. We can't choose our relatives, but we can choose to hasten a radical hospitality. And so here's the question I leave with you as we enter this holiday season of the solstice and Christmas and Kwanzaa and Hanukkah. The question is this: what will you do to live out your faith for the table where all can come to and gather? Will it be something done globally? Or will it be something closer to home, reaching out to the ones we love? Will it be caring for the hungry at Christmas time? Finding some space in your own life to care for your own soul? What will you do to live out your faith as Unitarian Universalist this season? Annie Dillard said that there is always the temptation in life to diddle around, making itsy-bitsy friends and meals and journeys for years on end. It is also self-conscious, so apparently moral. But she says, I won't have it. The world is wilder than all directions we can look to, more dangerous, more extravagant, and bright. We are raising tomatoes when we should be raising Cain or Lazarus. At the very least, we would want to try to make room at the welcome table for all who come. The year 2020 will mark the 400th anniversary of the arrival of the Mayflower and the colonization of New England. But the history is not entirely negative. It depends on how one looks at it. There are aspects to be honored as well. The pilgrims are some of the people Unitarian Universalists recognize as forebearers. Many churches established by pilgrims and early colonists in New England in the 1600s later became Unitarian Universalist congregations. The pilgrims came to this country in search of religious freedom and provided models of community that have informed our understanding of living in covenantal communities. And I just want to say, you don't throw out the baby with the bathwater. You know, a lot of the pilgrims, they didn't extend this to other people. I don't have to say any more. But many did. And so that's why I celebrate Thanksgiving. You don't throw away a Rolls Royce because it has a scratch on it. Well, maybe you do, I don't know. Many of us are still finding ourselves emotionally raw from what is going on in our nation and feeling especially vulnerable. The prospect of being with family and friends for Thanksgiving may be comforting, or it may be real, especially worrisome. Long-standing differences and tensions within families can make the holiday stressful, to say the least. Let's face it, politics may be making it harder to be together in love with our loved ones. Some among us will be alone on Thanksgiving or unable to see any family at a distance. Some may not have family, and some welcome this aloneness as a time for solitude. For others, it represents a time of loneliness and longing, a deep hungering for connection. Still others are grieving losses, including loved ones who've died, relationships that have ended, financial difficulties, unemployment. I think we all know that when life is humming along for us and our relationships are at our best, it's pretty easy to say, "I'm grateful." Finding gratitude in times of human disconnection and deep-seated hungering for connection is a challenge. Yet this is exactly when gratitude is needed the most. Here, too, we have much to learn from individuals and groups who have been historically marginalized. These individuals and groups know what it is to affirm that life is precious, to keep hope alive, and to remain in the struggle for the long haul despite the setbacks. During upheavals as well as times of progress, gratitude refuses to let go of what is true and what is good and what is beautiful, and refuses to live in despair. It affirms our connection and hunger to be one with the many people and cultures throughout the world. To be grateful is to remember that we all depend on each other for our well-being. We need each other. We need each other. The world needs us to need each other. Here we pledge to share the bread with all who hunger. Here we pledge to share hope, gratitude, goodness, courage, healing, justice, and beauty. This Thanksgiving, may we raise our voices in grateful praise. May we lift our voices in song to the source of all, the Spirit of Life, or who the Chagali people, the Cherokee, refer to as Unetla Nahi. Happy Thanksgiving. Amen. Aho, and blessed be. All righty. This Thanksgiving, for Native and non-Native people, let our hearts fill with hope, healing, and a desire to dismantle the barriers, physical, economic, educational, psychological, and spiritual, that divide us and oppress us. This time of year, Thanksgiving and Native American History Month, give us the opportunity to reflect on our collective history and to celebrate the beauty, strength, and resilience of Native peoples of North America. We remember the generosity of the Wampanoag tribe to the helpless settlers. We remember the hundreds of thousands of Native Americans who lost their lives at the hands of colonists and the genocide of entire tribes. We remember the vibrant and powerful Native descendants, families, and communities that persist to this day throughout the culture and this country. So, have a wonderful holiday. Have a great afternoon.
Have a great Thanksgiving, and come back next week when we'll hear guest speaker Reverend Robert Hughes discuss how Unitarian Universalists can affirm and promote the seven principles.